Oh, say can we see by the one light in all our earth to embrace at the call of all nations where our children can play in a world without war where we stand hand in hand in the grace of creation where the rivers run clean through the forests of green where the cities stand tall in the clear skies of freedom Oh, say do our hearts sing out for harmony and love forever on the planet of our birth, blessed with peace.
Welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and you can hear us live at accesssacramento.org, or you can hear this program and past programs at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. Today's program is about the best democracy money can buy, and it starts with an interview of David Callahan, David K. Johnson, and Arianna Huffington, and they're interviewed by Francesca Rhiannon. They discuss how economic elites fight for control of the political elites. And then after that, Matt Taibbi is interviewed by Tavis Smiley. The Rolling Stones editor explains the inner workings of Wall Street and criticizes the U.S. bank bailout. And after that, Timothy McVeigh talks to Andrew Bacevich about military-industrial complex cutbacks. Will the proposed defense cuts reduce the total national security budget?
Rich liberals, corporate politics, and the destruction of the middle class.
What I argue in my book is that the upper class has turned more liberal. What's happened is that a lot of people who have liberal leanings have made a lot of money in the so-called new economy.
That's David Callahan. We talked to him about his book, Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich and the Remaking of America.
The super rich can have better lives today. So those who own one jet can have two, and those who own two can get a third one so the kids have one.
And that's David K. Johnston. He's the author of Free Lunch and Perfectly Legal. We air excerpts from an encore interview with him in 2008.
Obviously, we're not third world America yet, but if we don't course correct, if we don't make fundamental changes, we will be.
And finally, we talk with Arianna Huffington about her new book, Third World America. That's all coming up on today's Writer's Voice. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. By the time this episode airs, the midterm elections will be over. If the pollsters and pundits are right, the Democrats will have lost control of one or both houses of Congress, and our legislative branch will have lurched violently to the right. The mainstream media would have us think that that's part of a greater drift rightward in the country at large. But my guest David Callahan says, not so. He sees a force for progressive change continuing to gather strength. And it's coming from the rise of a new class of rich liberals who are pushing the country and the Democratic Party to the left. That's the thesis of his new book, Fortunes of Change. It strikes a note both of hope and caution. Well, David Callahan, welcome to Writer's Voice.
It's great to be here.
Your book, Fortunes of Change, presents what seems to me a counterintuitive thesis. That you say that the rise of rich liberals is moving the Democratic Party leftward and promises to move the country in a progressive direction. Where do you have the evidence for this?
Well, I look at a number of different trends going on. One is the huge increase in money going into progressive causes from very wealthy people. So I look at issues such as the environment and gay rights. In fact, I have chapters on both those topics, and in both those areas, you see some very wealthy people giving a lot of money to progressive activist organizations that are working for change. The gay rights movement in particular has benefited from the infusion of a couple $100 million in the past 15 or 20 years from just a handful of super wealthy donors, and the giving to the environmental movement by wealthy progressives has been on an even larger scale.
What actually gave rise to this? I guess you couldn't actually call it a shift. You really say it's a rise of the new rich.
Right. What I argue in my book is that the upper class has turned more liberal, and it's not because the existing upper class of, 20 years ago just suddenly flipped and changed its political outlook. What's happened is that a lot of people who have liberal leanings have made a lot of money in the so-called new economy, the technology sector, the entertainment sector, the more complex areas of finance, the law profession. You have a tremendous number of super educated people who've often grown up in deep blue America. They've grown up in New York or California. They've grown up in places like Brookline, Massachusetts, or, the Bay Area or Westchester County. They've gone to pretty liberal universities, and they've come out into this knowledge economy and gotten rich. And a lot of these people, once they're rich, they still have the liberal politics that they did growing up. And in some cases, when they're very rich, they can harness that money to political activist causes. And this is a big reason why there's not only so much new money going into the progressive activist infrastructure, but also a huge amount of new money going to the Democratic Party. Barack Obama benefited tremendously from that during his 2008 run for the presidency.
He did benefit from it then. In fact, you talk about Obama's billionaires. I guess I had some questions because, on the one hand, as you point out, social liberalism has definitely been helped by this. But we can see an awful lot of those hedge fund billionaires who seem to be turning against Obama have fought tooth and nail against any kind of regulation of Wall Street. And in fact, it seems like now the rich are giving money to the Republicans and not the Democrats on the order of 8-1.
Well, there's no question that some of the wealthy people who backed Obama did so because they were really sick and tired of George Bush, really frightened by the extremism of the Republican Party, and were never very liberal. And they liked Obama because he seemed like a pretty sort of rational, moderate sort of guy. And those people have felt betrayed by Obama, and they aren't coming back. They have shifted their money to the Republican Party. And you're not going to see them around anytime soon in the Democratic coalition. But there is a lot of other donors who have stuck with the Democrats. Warren Buffett said the other day that he would vote for Obama all over again, completely agrees with everything that Obama has done. There are a number of these wealthy people who believe that the reforms of Wall Street didn't go far enough. In fact, ironically, we're seeing a number of wealthy donors who are sitting out this election, not giving the money that they did in the past because they're disappointed that Obama did not go far enough, that he's not been left enough, that he's not been tough enough. So it's a complicated picture. I mean, there's these wealthy liberal-leaning donors really do run the gamut, and certainly some as well have tried to use their money and access to block the Democrats from being tougher on financial reform. No question about that. And as I stated in my book, I think of that this Wall Street money that that Obama has gotten has had a corrupting effect, and that all the money going to the Democratic Party from the finance sector has been quite corrosive in terms of that party being willing to stand up to Wall Street and all its abuses. So it's not a simple picture here.
It's not at all a simple picture, not even with Obama. I mean, you say in your book, David Callahan, the book being Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich and the Remaking of America, you say that Obama is like the most leftist politician, and you cite his record in the Senate, and I'm willing to give you that, but it certainly seems that he's made a sharp right face once he came into the presidency. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I during the 2008 primary, never saw Obama as the most, liberal candidate. I personally was a bigger fan of John Edwards, who was running more as a progressive than Obama. You know, Obama was named the most liberal senator in 2007 by National Journal, and I do cite that, his voting record in the Senate placed him squarely on the left of the Democratic Party, and I note that many wealthy donors backed Obama, even though he had consistently been given negative ratings by pro-business groups and conservative groups. And so that was striking to me. In terms of what Obama has done, I think there's no question that he's not been tough enough in terms of standing up to Wall Street. He's not been liberal enough on other issues as well, such as the national security issues. I mean, I think that there's a lot of liberals who are disappointed with Obama. Does that reflect the influence of his wealthy donors? Well, that's hard to say, because a lot of these wealthy donors, as I've noted, are holding back because Obama has not been liberal enough. I mean, you have to keep in mind, some wealthy donors want the Democratic Party to move further to the left, like some of these wealthy donors in Hollywood. They're often pushing the Democratic Party to the left, and some wealthy donors want to push the Democratic Party to the center on these economic issues particularly. And so it's hard to say. The conventional wisdom is that big money always pushes the Democrats to the center, but that's not true. Some big money pushes them to the center, some big money pushes them to the left. So again, it's not a simple picture.
So, on balance, I mean, always we're kind of looking for trends here, and it seems to me that you have identified a trend. Have you identified a trend that is just notable for the fact that it exists, or do you feel that it actually is creating progressive change? I mean, as I say, I would certainly give you the social mores, the gay, lesbian, civil rights. And we can talk about that a little bit later. But on fundamental issues of the economy, on the fact that we see the middle class increasingly eroded, the middle class that Obama pledged to protect, he certainly isn't.
Well, and what you'll see is some of these wealthy donors are actually concerned about those economic issues. In general, what I argue in the book is that the wealthy liberals are more focused on these social issues. They tend to be particularly tone deaf to the negative effects of globalization and the effects of free trade, which have really devastated parts of the American heartland and the working class. On the other hand, you have wealthy donors like Herb and Marion Sandler, who have given millions of dollars to the Center for Responsible Lending, creating this whole new organization that's going after predatory lending. The Sandlers have also given money to Acorn, the grassroots group. Another of these people I look at in my book is a guy named Rob McKay, who's heir to the Taco Bell fortune, who used his money to underwrite the living wage movement throughout California to try to raise wages for workers who are, you know, getting money in government contracts. So some of these donors definitely do care about this stuff. And, you know, I think that, you know, what I suggest is you got to think about this and imagine the counterfactual. You know, imagine that the entire upper class was, in fact, unified behind the conservative wing of the Republican Party, what our politics would look like. I think that it would be significantly more conservative politics than we have now. And the Democratic Party would be much weaker. The progressive infrastructure would be much weaker. So what I suggest is not so much that the, you know, the upper class is swung behind economic justice issues by any means, but rather that the upper class is has become more divided, and some of them are in fact, you know, real traitors to their class, and that has created political opportunities that didn't exist just a decade ago.
You're listening to Writer's Voice, and we're talking with David Callahan about his book, Fortunes of Change. So tell us some of those political opportunities that you're seeing being created.
Well, I think the battle over taxes is quite significant. You know, I look at the number of wealthy people who are supportive of efforts to raise taxes on the rich. You know, Warren Buffett has been out there arguing for years that the tax code is stacked against the little guy. You know, he has been, you know, pointing out that he pays lower taxes than his secretary, and Warren Buffett has been involved in this effort to preserve the estate tax, which the Republicans have been trying to kill. Right now in the state of Washington, there's a ballot initiative coming up in this election that would put a surtax on the wealthiest residents of that state and use the money to pay for education, mainly benefiting low-income students. And Bill Gates Sr. has given $500,000 to try to get that ballot initiative passed, and Bill Gates Jr. has come out in favor of that ballot initiative, and a number of other wealthy people in the state of Washington are fighting for that ballot initiative to raise taxes on themselves to create more funding for education. There's other wealthy people like Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder, who are against that ballot initiative, but this is an example of the divisions among the upper class that we're seeing. You know, if all the rich people in the state of Washington were against that ballot initiative, I think it would have a harder chance of passing.
But then that begs the question of relative weight. I mean, California is a perfect example. Here you have Jerry Brown being opposed to the Republican nominee for governor, Meg Whitman, a self-made billionaire, pouring huge amounts of money into her campaign. You also have the whole push in the wake of Citizens United, the whole push by big money interests to destroy California's clean energy initiative. It seems that the forces of the right wing are far more powerful than those of the progressive left wing.
Well, I think that the money in politics has always historically favored corporate America. I think that we've seen the huge amount of money spent on lobbying in Washington to fight health care reform, to fight climate change bill, to fight Wall Street regulation. You know, ExxonMobil spends more money than any other corporation in America lobbying to stop reforms that would benefit the planet. I mean, there's no question that there's a lot of money arrayed against progressive change in this country, a lot of special interest, a lot of corporate money, and a lot of money of individual rich people. What I find striking, though, is how much money there actually is coming from some of those wealthy people for progressive causes and making things possible that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So if you look in the area of the environment, the Sierra Club, which has been, you know, on the forefront of the battle to push through climate change legislation, has gotten $200 million from a single hedge fund guy, named David Gelbaum. The ACLU got $95 million from him. But just to look at the example of California, you know, what you've seen is that the wealthy in California are quite divided. So on that issue of energy and the environment, in 2006, a guy named Steve Bing, who's a wealthy heir who lives in Los Angeles, put $50 million into a state ballot initiative that would have imposed a surtax on corporations, energy, oil corporations, and use that money to fund renewable energy. That ballot initiative, which is quite radical, environmental ballot initiative, was also backed by a couple other billionaires, including John Doerr, the Silicon Valley investor. We've seen other California ballot initiatives that have been backed by billionaires that have tried to water down Proposition 13, which is, of course, the anti-tax proposition in California. So again, this is the picture when you look at California, when you look at a lot of places, is, you know, an upper class that is not the uniform kind of Republican conservative upper class that, you know, we've always heard about and learned about, you know, from C. Wright Mills and you know, 100 years of class politics.
We're talking with David Callahan about his book, Fortunes of Change. In it, he says a new class of liberal billionaires are funding important efforts to improve health and education for the poor. But no matter how worthy the cause, Callahan says there's a downside to this philanthropy, and it has to do with democracy.
I argue that if you're a progressive, there's a lot of good stuff here in terms of, you know, rich people putting their money into the environmental movement, or rich people like George Soros putting a lot of money into democratic politics and really helping kind of level the playing field and sort of push back that Republican juggernaut. On the other hand, even if you agree with these people, at the end of the day, it's still money in politics. It's still a very small, wealthy minority who are spending a lot of money to influence our electoral system and public policy. You know, in the 2004 election, just four liberal donors, put $75 million into trying to elect John Kerry. And I think that that's just very disturbing, even though I certainly wanted John Kerry to win. And I think it's also disturbing when these people have so much influence over areas of public policy. You know, Bill Gates has put a tremendous amount of money into public education, having a huge influence over the direction of public education policy in a number of cities. Gates was backing the small high schools as a way to improve education, put $2 billion into promoting small high schools, turning a lot of districts upside down, and then his research found that, well, small high schools weren't really the silver bullet after all. You know, that's just very troubling. I mean, you know, who is Bill Gates to be determining the direction of U.S. education policy?
What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. Well, come on, General, let's move fast. The old big chance has come at last. Gotta go out, get those reds. The only good commie is the one that's dead. And you know that peace can only be won when the golden rule of the kingdom come. And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. We'll be right back.
afraid. Just hope and pray that if they drop the bomb, they drop it on the Viet Cong. And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
Well, come on, brothers, throughout the land, pack your boys up to Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate, send them off before too late. Be the first one on your block to have your boy come home in a box.
And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
And now for something completely different.